Chapter 2. You need to get the basics right. First impressions count. How long does it take to make a good first impression? What would you guess? I've asked that question numerous times in workshops, and in the MBA leadership class that I used to facilitate, I usually received varied responses from 1 second to 2 minutes. There is little doubt that we make our judgments snap judgments. I've read 7 seconds. I've read 10 seconds. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Blink, indicates that it's about 3 seconds and backs it up with good research evidence. For example, Gladwell compares the intuitive responses of a university class rating a teaching professor after 3 seconds of observation compared with responses following the examination of the same professor after an extended time viewing videotapes of the professor teaching. The result? No significant difference. The conclusion? That our intuitive first hunches are as good as our prolonged observations and evaluation. If you're new to the organisation or business, then remember that first impressions definitely do count. Proverb: first impressions are the most lasting. Further, Dr. Judith Glasser at the 2016 International Coach Federation Australasian Conference, in both her keynote address and her subsequent workshop, maintained that neurologically, it takes just 0.07 seconds for the brain to work out if someone is like you or not like you. You get the picture? If first impressions are that quick, you need to make sure that you create good first impressions. You don't get a second chance to make a good first impression. So, at a personal level, what does that mean for how you present? What do you need to do to make a good first impression? Do you smile? Look at the person in the eye? Have a firm handshake and call them by name? You're on before you're on. Let me ask you another question. Who is the most watched person in anyone's life? Yes, I'm aware that we watch ourselves constantly, but beyond that, who is the most watched person? If you're in a relationship, then it is your spouse or partner. If you're a child, then it is your parent or parents. So, then who is the second most watched person in anyone's life? Would you guess? It's the boss. What does this mean, therefore? Basically, you're on before you're on. As the new team leader, the new supervisor, the new leading hand or manager, you are now being watched. Staff watch your moods, your attitude, your behaviour, how you handle yourself, what you stand for, and generally, how you conduct yourself. Can they trust you? Are you a person of integrity and honesty with sound emotional intelligence? Are you approachable and open in your communication? Do you give recognition and acknowledgement where it is due? Do you show vulnerability when necessary? Do you have a humble disposition? Are you organized and delegate appropriately? How do you cope with stress and deadlines? On the other hand, do you play favorites and cause cliques and silos to form? Do you play being right, where you are prone to put people down who do not agree with you, or do you criticize those, often in public, who have a different opinion? Is it a case of your way or the highway? Are you an ego where it's all about you and where you take all the credit for things accomplished but blame others when things might go wrong somehow? Do you try to get on side with everyone and be their friend, which means that you really don't lead at all? Maybe you don't do any of this all of the time, but just occasionally, which is enough to send alarm bells ringing for your team or staff. You're the boss now, and people want to know how to connect to you and whether you can be trusted. Their work satisfaction and happiness, as well as their work engagement, depends to a very large part as to who you are and how you manage yourself. Their future, and perhaps their professional growth and possible promotion, may well rest in your hands. Are they going to watch you? You bet they are. The harsh reality, though, is that it is part of human survival for us to be weighing up our surrounds and the people in it. Moment by moment, we are evaluating what is going on around us, taking in information and sizing up our situation. It is human nature. Not surprisingly, we naturally weigh up those in our vicinity because we need to know how we might respond and interact with them. We take in information constantly, and our radar is constantly scanning our horizon to check how we might react and respond. We measure and note what people say and how they say it. We evaluate what people do and how they do it, constantly monitoring and scanning. I read recently that our brain consists of 86 billion neurons and several hundred trillion connections. Yes, we can't help our brain doing what it's supposed to do, scan and make sense of our surrounds. From the moment you get out of the car in the car park, or the way you walk into the building, or the way that you walk on site, or the way that you walk around the factory, you are being watched. At one location where I coached, staff used to tell me that they could fairly well determine what sort of day they were going to have with how the CEO drove into the car park in the morning and how he then walked into the building. I also coached a managing director who I suggested that when he walked to the toilet, that he walked more slowly and looked more relaxed. His staff were picking up messages that his quick walk to the toilet was a sign of things not being well, or that he was stressed and under the pump, and hence it was probably not a good time to engage him. He was actually quite taken aback at receiving this feedback, because it had never occurred to him that his behaviour in this way could be interpreted in such a fashion. He was just a person who happened to move quickly, in that he was highly energetic and action-oriented in style. He now tries hard to be aware of how he walks and moves, in that he is more conscious that his staff make up a story about his attitude and state of mind in the way that he is being observed. You're rated on what you do, not what you say. Words are cheap. Actions talk. Are you a person who walks the talk or just talks? Do you follow up and do what you said you were going to do? Do you follow through? Do you get back to others when you say you were going to? Communication is more about what you do than what you say. Integrity is one of the factors that staff look for in a leader, and following up and doing what you say you will do is a clear sign of being authentic and the real deal. If you can't meet the deadline that you promised, or you can't deliver for some reason, then it is important to let the staff member know why and then work out another time that suits you both. This brings me to the salient point about nonverbal behaviour. How much of your communication is determined by your verbal behavior, i.e., what you say, the content of your spoken word, versus the nonverbal behavior, i.e., how you say it, the feeling or emotion that you portray. I've asked this question hundreds of times at countless seminars and workshops that I've conducted, and I've had every response imaginable, from 90% verbal to 10% nonverbal, and vice versa. Most people guess around the 50 to 50 mark, or 60 to 40 mark, to perhaps 75-25 in both directions, while a few might guess 80-20 in both directions. Most, though, have never really thought about it. Yet it is a critical question. You need to know the answer, because communication is at the core of what we do every minute of every day, even when we are not talking. And as a leader, you are being judged on it. Psychologist Albert Mehrabian has done extensive laboratory measurements on what happens when one person talks to another. Mehrabian conducted some milestone research back in 1970, where he looked at the question of verbal and nonverbal communication. See L. Longfellow, Body Talk, Psychology Today, October 1970, Volume 4, Number 5, page 46. His work has largely stood the test of time, although it has been challenged too. What did he find? Verbal communication only accounted for 7% of the impact, whereas nonverbal accounted for 93% of the impact. So, if you remember 10% verbal and 90% nonverbal, you'll be close to the mark. Even if it's not 10-90, and it's 20-80, or even 25-75, you get the message that there is a lot of communication that is non-verbal. What's the point here? How you behave is a huge message that you're giving out to the world and those around you. How you conduct yourself speaks volumes. It's not about skills. It's about communication. Originally, and in most cases, individuals are hired for their first or second jobs on the basis of their skills, technical knowledge, and perhaps competence and experience. It doesn't matter if you started in a trainee role, as an apprentice, or studied for a professional qualification. It was all about acquiring the necessary skills and knowledge. Over time, you gain greater confidence in your skills, you gain greater knowledge and understanding of the job, and you take on tasks of a more complex nature as you become more adept in your role, trade, or profession. Hence, for all your education, both at secondary level as well as post-secondary and tertiary education, it has all been about skill development and performance. Now, however, you are a new leader, and although it is expected that you have a high level of technical skills and knowledge, the ballpark has changed. Now, it is about managing people and communicating effectively. And as we have indicated above, this is a ballpark in which you have had no or very little formal training or education. But this one thing you need to know. You had better get good at communication. I remember reading a small book by John C. Maxwell called Attitude 101 about some research conducted by the Stanford Research Institute in the USA, where they identified that business success and profit, as well as individual career success and promotion, was attributable to two main factors, namely the following: technical skills and knowledge, and interpersonal and communication skills. Now, perhaps you might think that that was not surprising news. Business and career success would no doubt be due to those two factors, you might say. However, the Stanford Group went a step further. They were able to attribute a percentage to each factor in relation to how much each contributed to success. What would you guess was the percentage of each factor in regards to its contribution towards success? The research findings were compelling in this regard. Technical skills and knowledge attributed for only 12.5% of the success, whereas interpersonal and communication skills attributed for 87.5%. What does that tell you? The cynics might say that all you really need is the gift of the gab and you'll be okay. And unfortunately, in some cases, that does happen. However, the real message is that most of us have concentrated on getting the technical skills, knowledge, and information so correct that somehow or other we've overlooked the importance of the interpersonal and communication skills. Most of us have been so concerned to get our piece of paper, such as a certificate, diploma, or degree, including the MBA, that we haven't paid much attention to the people skills area. In a sense, some of us have just taken that part, i.e. interpersonal and communication skills, for granted. Certainly, our general secondary and tertiary education sectors haven't helped either, and that we have been brainwashed into believing that it was all about getting a good grade point average, getting qualifications, and gaining knowledge. In part it is, but in large part, there is another dimension which we haven't been taught, and that's how to communicate effectively with those around us and how to communicate at an effective level and how to have an impact emotionally as well as lead effectively. So, what are those skills in the interpersonal and communication area that help us to be effective and to have an impact, especially in the work setting? In a word, it is about listening and asking good questions. This is covered later in Chapter 9, but has also been covered in another book that I have written for leaders and managers, which is titled Listen Up Now: How to Increase Growth and Profit by Really Listening to Your Customers and Clients. It is available through www.listenupnow.com.au in either hard copy, audio, or Kindle. Everything we do is communication. Chapter 2, Summary. You need to get the basics right. First impressions count. First impressions are quick, very quick. So you need to make sure that you create good first impressions. You're on before you're on. What does this mean? As a new team leader, the new supervisor, the new leading hand or manager, you are now being closely watched by your team. How you handle yourself, what you stand for, and generally, how you conduct yourself. You're rated on what you do, not what you say. Words are cheap. Actions talk. Are you a person who just walks the talk or just talks? Do you follow up and do what you say you were going to do? Do you get back to others when you say you were going to? It's not about skills. It's about communication. Most of us have concentrated on getting the technical skills, knowledge, and information so correct that somehow or other we've overlooked the critical importance of interpersonal and communication skills.